All right, if I can have your attention, it's just about 12:30. Welcome to Recent Methodological Developments in Substance Use Research. And we have four fine presenters with, I think, very interesting data that you'll appreciate. A couple of things. Please turn your cell phones off or put them on vibrate or something. And please fill out the evaluation forms. They're somewhere, I think, back there. And also, please, if you're not a member, considering joining ATOD. So we get more, we get more sessions the more members we have. So if you want to be in a session, you want to attend a session or organize a session next year, join ATOD. We'll have each of our presenters present. I'll be introducing them. And then at the end, we'll have time for questions. Each will have approximately 18 minutes, and that should give us 10 or 15 minutes at the end. Our first presenter is Shanda Hunt. And she's doing challenges and potential solutions when conducting alcohol research in military settings. Shanda. I'm supposed to say. Shanda is from School of Public Health, University of Minnesota. But it says up there anyway.
Hello. Thank you. Thank you for the introduction, Dwayne. This is Dwayne, everyone.
Oh, yeah. I'm sorry. I'm Dwayne McBride. I'm a sociologist at Fermanagh University across the lake. Thank you for introducing us.
Yes. I have no financial relationships to disclose. So I am a research coordinator within the Alcohol Epidemiology Program at the University of Minnesota, and I manage a study funded by the Department of Defense where we are taking an alcohol training program for bars and restaurants, nightclubs, alcohol establishments in general, and bringing that to a community that is near Army installations. Part of the issue and how we got this funding, this is kind of an unusual funding source for us, the issue is that over 40% of active duty military personnel report high rates of binge drinking. A lot of response to that when we talk about that in presentations is, well, a lot of military duty are very young people, and a lot of young college students also have heavy rates of binge drinking, but it's actually higher among military personnel compared to the same age groups of civilians. So the U.S. military has made many efforts to reduce alcohol-related problems, including deglamorizing alcohol use, implementing personal responsibility policies, implementing health promotion programs. I don't know if any of you have heard about a lot of the suicide prevention programs that have been going on. A lot of those have to do with heavy alcohol use. They're funding research projects. And one of the largest things that they're doing is restricting access to alcohol on the military installations. It's a lot less common than it has been in the past. And what does that mean when you're restricting access on the installation? Everybody goes off the installation to drink. So that's why we got funded, because we're a community intervention. So it's important to change the drinking environment in order to reduce alcohol-related problems. Changing the environment and the culture is a big piece of alcohol interventions. So changing the environment around the community installation is a promising new approach. Bars and restaurants do contribute to high-risk drinking and related problems. One of the reasons that I was hired for this position is not only my public health background, but I worked in bars and restaurants on and off for over 11 years. So I had a very deep knowledge of the situation there. Not much is known about establishments that cater to military personnel. There haven't been alcohol studies that were specific to communities around Army installations. And so we need to identify some effective strategies. As far as the methodology, this was a developmental study, feasibility study. So it's a pilot. We only targeted 8 intervention sites and 8 comparison sites, and that was across 2 Army installation communities. We are building this off of previous research that we have done. We have actually been doing alcohol training programs for 20 years. This is the 4th version of this intervention. We have done these trainings in over 600 bars, restaurants, nightclubs, hotels, community festivals. And so that was the base program for this new one. There were three phases. We needed to do an assessment of the alcohol establishments, try and define perhaps what a military bar was. You know, being from Minnesota, we were very unfamiliar with the two southern communities that we were going to. And so we needed to kind of define for ourselves what types of communities we were going into. The second phase was to develop the program, and the third phase was to pilot test it. For the purpose of this presentation, we are going to be focusing on the assessment phase that we did. We were hoping to, like I said, characterize the alcohol establishment environment around the military installations. So what we proposed to do was to do 40 in-depth interviews with community leaders and military leaders from both communities. That's a combined total of 40 for both communities and both types of interviews. We proposed to do focus groups and interviews with 48 soldiers and in-depth interviews with establishment owners and managers from those two communities. Our beginning strategy, like I said, we were really unfamiliar with the communities and we were unfamiliar with working with the military. So we started by developing a military advisory board. We had two retired officers. We had a reservist who is currently active and a younger veteran who was also a bouncer and a bartender. We had two local members and two out-of-state members advised to our advisory board. We also had a DOD-assigned science officer. This is the person who we report to quarterly, and she was also put in place to kind of guide us through the process of working with the military. Along those same lines, we also had a human protection specialist assigned to us by the Army who we could go to for guidance. We also were able to have a DOD-assigned recruiter. This person was responsible for helping us recruit those military leaders and soldiers, or at least guide us for how to do that. Unfortunately, we were unaware that this person was assigned to us for about 2.5 months. We actually, when we found out that we knew him. He had met the PI at a meeting, and she had asked if we could kind of pick his brain and have a phone meeting with him, and he obliged, and nobody ever disclosed to us that that was our recruitment help. We found out much later. So we also had some informal discussions with researchers who work with military contracts. This was invaluable to us. They really helped guide us how to work and navigate the system when you're working with the military. So when we were doing these key informant interviews, you know, we, like I said, did many different types of people in these communities. We'd wanted to speak to 10 bar managers and owners, and we reached 6. We were very happy with that number. Our experience working with bar and restaurant managers, this is actually a high number. This is a high success rate for us. Bar managers and owners are generally an elusive group. They're very, very busy. They play many different roles, and so they're kind of difficult to get a hold of. So that was great. As far as the community leaders, we reached 25 out of a combined total of 40 for community and military leaders. That was great. We had a really slow start. To give you an example of what a slow start means, there were 3 of us calling community leaders for interviews. It took 3 of us 71 people to get our first 7 interviews. So that was painful, and we really started to get scared that we weren't going to get the right assessment information that we needed. But being persistent, using multiple contact methods, and really kind of developing relationships with the gatekeepers was really useful. Once the administrative assistants and front desk folks started to hear my name over and over and over again, it almost felt like they befriended me and kind of helped me get to those leaders that we needed to interview. For these soldiers, we reached 29 out of 48, which we're very happy with at this point. We started by conducting focus groups. That was going to be our main way of collecting this data. When we booked our travel and headed down south, we only had 3 people signed up in both communities for the focus groups. It was very difficult to recruit. We could not recruit on post. We could recruit on the in the paper that went out to folks on post and via Craigslist. But we did not get many takers despite a very rare $50 incentive that was allowed to be paid to them. So what ended up working for us was snowball sampling. Once we got a couple people in, they told their friends that we were going to be in town for the next couple of days, and they in turn contacted us, and we ended up getting some attendees at our focus groups. And then when we got back to Minnesota, we continued with the Craigslist ads and did some phone interviews, resulting in the 29 out of 48. This was the piece that was more challenging and obviously disappointing for us. So we were able to interview 0 military leaders. It was really important to us that we speak with military leaders. We thought that they would be very invested in our research, that they would really be interested in knowing what we were doing to help their soldiers, that they would be interested in knowing what we were doing out in the community. And we still believe that they would be interested in that, but we were never able to speak to them. This was a 2-year pilot program, and we spent 1/4 of our entire research time allotted attempting to speak to military leaders. We got a lot of non-response. There was no follow-through when we would contact people. There were a lot of dead ends. Like I said, we had a recruiter who gave us a couple of names. Unfortunately, none of those panned out. There were email chains we discovered going around, not behind our backs, but without our knowledge, with a lot of misleading information about what we were requesting. I even, towards the end, reached out to a personal contact, my very best friend. Her husband is career military, and so I finally reached out to him in desperation. And unbeknownst to me, he works at the Pentagon, and so I had folks at the Pentagon trying to help me get access to this population. I want to be very generous. I think it was just a confusing request. Some of the things that we heard at the end was that some folks thought that we were, folks thought we didn't have the proper documentation. So we would send them our grant contract with the Army, we would send them our Minnesota IRB information, and then there's also an Army IRB called HRPO. We had all that. We would send it to every person we contacted, and it came about that we were, they thought they had needed a form called an AD. That's actually their IRB. They actually had it in their hands, and they didn't know that they had it. There were some folks who were saying that we had already violated their protocols by going on post, which we had not. We do not even live in the state. There were some folks who I think just didn't know themselves what proper channels to go through. We were referred to 7 different Army agencies to get permission to interview folks. And we had no points of contact at those agencies, so we're just blind calling. In the end, after 6 months, we got permission at one of our 2 posts to do interviews. We were informed we had to use the proper channels. And when we asked what the proper channels were, there was no response. And we really had to move on. We only had 18 months left in our research. We did speak with one person unofficially and not recorded who had not even worked at that post for 6 months. And 2 of the most significant people that we really wanted to interview retired during the 6 months that we were trying to get permission to speak to them. So obviously that was disappointing. Definitely some of the things that we learned for further research for ourselves and for other researchers, if you are working with the military, trying to learn the military culture right away is highly advisable, but also immediately work on gaining permission to interview military leaders immediately after funding. That short pause that we had while we tried to figure out the military ourselves you know, really set us back. Recruiting assertively with both military and community leaders is highly recommended by, you know, making repeated phone calls, establishing rapport like I talked about, and utilizing all possible contacts to identify and help reach new potential participants. Every single name and organization we were given, we called. And we did, you know, get some good results. I just some very basic results are that we were able to identify 71 bars that cater to military personnel. And we were able to call all of those establishments and ask them if they wanted to participate in our study. So despite our challenges, you know, we were able to identify quite a few places, and we did have some good recruitment success in the community. And, you know, folks were very invested in us when we talked to them. When we were trying to get permission to interview military leaders, there were several individuals who were on our side, batting for us, sending out emails. We didn't even know about this until the very end. And there were some folks who were trying to force military leaders to talk to us, which, as you know, as researchers, that's highly illegal and that cannot be done. And so there were people trying to explain that on our behalf. There were quite a few individuals who were really interested in our research and asked us to keep them posted about how our results were coming along. And so I do think that partnering with the military is great, and I do think that they're very interested in further research. But I think the process could be streamlined. But like I said, in the community and with the soldiers were great in speaking to us. As long as you're persistent and go about all those routes that you can, eventually you can build momentum and begin to collect the necessary data. So like I said, we recommend focusing on learning the military culture very quickly. We would recommend to any military funders that there needs to be a more streamlined, clear process on how to guide us for recruitment. That would help to save quite a bit of money and time and bring about swifter and more effective results. You know, look for opportunities for feedback. We have some presentations that we have to give because of our funding situation, and that was an opportunity for the PI to let some of the higher-up folks know the troubles that we were having. And that started a nice conversation between her and other researchers who were having the same problems. And I think it's important to note that one of the installations, as a result of the mass confusion surrounding our request to do some simple interviews, has led one of the installations that we are talking with to start developing a protocol for how to deal with research requests, which is great. Thank you. So in the end, it was a successful study. It was a challenging study. Being the research coordinator, I felt like I was spinning in circles sometimes, but it was very rewarding to work with the military. I think this is a really needed area of research. It's just that the process, like I said, was challenging and could be more streamlined. Thank you, and I appreciate your attention. Thanks, guys.